Okay, we're going to get started. I don't know how much time I have. I know we went a little long on the presentations in there, but I've got at least 45 minutes. I think I could squeeze 45 minutes out of this one. If Bob can do it, I can do it. So I haven't had any prayers with the brethren yet today, except for the guy I took to lunch. So let's take a chance to pray, and then we'll get to work. Let's pray. Father God in heaven, we just want to pause as we come into your presence and we think about you sitting on that throne and the scene that is around you right now with the angels worshiping and with the Lamb who is worthy. And it brings us to our knees, Father, in humility. We know that we're not worthy because of the sin in our life to come into your presence, but Jesus is worthy. And through his name we come to you, Father. And we thank you for all that has gone into this weekend, for the challenging material and presentations that have been put forth. And we just ask, God, that you will be with the rest of our time together. In Jesus' name, amen. All right. As Wayne was mentioning earlier, my name is Mike Green, and I am here to talk to you about church planting. Let me tell you the key to getting an invite to Oklahoma City to speak about church planting. Okay, here's the key. Be sitting in your favorite coffee shop in Hopewell, Virginia with Wayne, and you look at their event space and go, you know, somebody ought to plant a church there, and it'll do it. I guess that's all it took was me telling Wayne, hey, no, there's a little bit more to it than that. If I was honest with you, and I've done some pretty tough stuff in my life, planting a church out of scratch was probably the hardest thing that I've ever done. It challenged me spiritually, it challenged my marriage, it challenged my relationships that I had with brethren. But like so many of these other presentations that we've heard here at the True Ministry Conference so far, you know, I was listening to Chris talk and the challenge that this generation is facing regarding pornography in the church. And it is a problem. It is a problem. Or listening to Bob talk and the deficiency that we have in leaders in the church. It's a problem. I mean, it really is a problem. The fact that we as a brotherhood are not planting churches is a problem. Now, I know Wayne said to be positive, but I'm positive there's a problem. Okay. And I want to get into this first session, and the first thing I want to do is just introduce to you what I'd like to do in this first part, and then the second part's actually going to be tomorrow morning. But I want us to wrap our mind around the ideas that, you know, contrary to the idea that church planting is this, you know, cutting edge, modern, hipster, special forces way to do ministry. Look, church planting is part of the strategy that God has woven into the church from the very beginning. You cannot preach the gospel and expand the kingdom outward without planting churches. Wrap your mind around this. Every church in existence today was planted by someone for some reason. Every church. In fact, let me ask you this question. Why was your church started? Do you know the answer to that? Do you know how it was started? Somebody took the initiative. It wasn't always there. I can guarantee you that. Whatever church that you're attending right now hasn't always been in existence. Someone took the initiative to start that church. What was their motivation? Not every church is the same, is planted for the same reason. What is the reason that that church is in existence? And so what I want you to understand is that's not by accident. Churches get planted and the gospel is gone into the uttermost parts of the earth as part of God's strategy for sending the message of His Son, Jesus Christ, into the world. That's God's strategy. It was the kingdom advancement strategy, and we're going to talk about that a little bit in this afternoon session. But what I hope to do is take some experience that comes from my own personal story and weave it with some other things that I have regarding this topic and give you something useful. I don't know why you came to this session. I don't know why you did. In fact, I wish a whole lot of other people would have came to this session. Because I believe that we haven't given this topic, church planting, the attention that it needs. And by the end of this session, if I haven't shown you that we need to start thinking about it, I want you to ask me and say, wait, come back to that, Mike. Why do we all need to be thinking about church planting? Because we all, and I want to emphasize the word all, we all need to be thinking about church planting right now. And I'll tell you why in just a few moments. But around 2004, 2005, I was a youth minister at a congregation in Florida, still trying to find my way in ministry. It was my first work. And I got an email from a guy. And the email said, "Hey, I know of a church in Texas that wants to support a guy to plant a church in either the Northeast or the Northwest of the United States, and we're wondering if you're interested." The reason I got that email is because they knew that I was in the military in the Northwest and I might potentially be interested. I called a friend of mine who was in the military, and I said, "Hey, this guy sent me this email. What do you think? What do you think about us moving back to the Pacific Northwest to plant a church?" And he said, "Sure, why not?" So he took a job with Southwest Airlines, and I tried to start raising some funds, and off we went. I had no clue how to plant a church or what went into planting a church. I didn't realize what I was getting myself into. I mean, literally. It was the hardest thing that I've ever done in my life to recruit, plant, and sustain a brand new baby church where there was none before. But let me tell you this. It was also one of the most rewarding things that I've ever done in my life. To look at a place where the church didn't exist and to look back over the years and realize that a church now exists in a place that it wasn't, you can take pride in doing something like that. Yeah, it challenged me and it was difficult, but it was also one of the most rewarding experiences of my life. I could tell you some more about that story, and I'll probably tie it in with tomorrow's lesson where we're actually going to look at the how-to, look at the reasons and the ins and the outs and all of the different ways that you could go about planting a church. But what I mainly want to do today is convict you about the idea of this church planting as a strategy that's woven within God's advancement of the gospel into the world. And then I want to look at this crisis that we're facing in the church in the United States as a case study. This crisis, and it really is, a crisis that we're facing, like the crisis of leadership, like the crisis of pornography, the decline of the church, and churches closing their doors is creating a crisis. And if we're not aware of it now, we're certainly going to be aware of it in the future. Okay? And then I'm going to give you 10 suggestions, 10 bold suggestions, on how we need to apply this strategy of church planting, this strategy of establishing new congregations to not just guys that are coming out of college, guys that are coming out of our preaching schools, but also our local congregations, down to the very idea of what we are telling our members about the need to multiply. Okay? So let's get into it for just a little bit this afternoon. And the first thing I want you to do is I want you to see the strategy. Run with me, if you would, real quick, through these scriptures. These are going to be very familiar to you, and so I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on them because I want to spend some more time on some other stuff. But I want you to think about this passage. Wesley was talking about Matthew, the Gospel of Matthew this morning, and he talked about this passage, the turning point in the Gospel of Matthew. And I was right there with him because I was thinking about my message. I want you to think about what Jesus said in Matthew chapter 16 and verse 18. Once Peter had made that great confession, that good confession, that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of the living God, Jesus said to him, "You're right, Peter, and upon that confession, I will build my church." Build is synonymous with plant, is synonymous with kingdom. And you think about when we build something, what do we use? A blueprint, a plan. No builder goes out to build something, or no good builder, I might say, to build a skyscraper or to build a house, and he doesn't have a blueprint, a plan, in order to build that house. No gardener goes out and just throws seed all over the place. He takes care to toil the ground and to sow the seed in a row and to keep the plants separate from one another. And a kingdom is not advanced without a strategy. And so right there, birth in Jesus' first comments in the gospel accounts about the church is a strategy. That God's presence on earth is going to continue in Jesus' name when He builds His church, when He plants His church. But that's not new, is the thing I need you to understand. You see, from the very beginning of the Bible all the way to the end of the Bible, this theme runs right through it to the very end, that God's presence on earth is through His people. So God makes known his will on earth through the people that he is working with. Whether we're talking about Israel in the Old Testament or the church in the New Testament, God manifests himself through the actions of the people that belong to him. When you think about that in the context of a community, or you think about that in the context of a city, where is God's presence most evident in a city? Is it not amongst his people? And when his people don't have a presence in the community, can we rightfully say that God is present in that community? I know that God is present in that community. I'm not limiting God to say that he is only present when a few members of the church are present in that community. But what I'm saying is, if you look at his strategy for advancing the specific knowledge of God's will for the world and what he was doing through his son, Jesus Christ, his choice of strategy was to do it through his people. Christ said, I will build my church. We turn to Acts chapter 2 and verse 41, and we see this very important word added. And here's where we start to see that strategy take flesh. We're putting some meat on the bones now. And in Acts 2 verse 41, when those who had received the word of God were baptized in Jesus' name, number one, they were added to the church at large. We use these distinctions in the church today. Sometimes we refer to the church as this global entity, and we are right in doing so because the New Testament uses that word. Other times we will use the church to mean the local congregation. This is the West Side Church of Christ here that we're meeting in their building. That is, adhering to a specific leadership. They come together in this place to go out of this place to do God's ministry together as a church. That's what we mean by the local church. Sometimes we use it to refer to the assembly of God's people, like in 1 Corinthians chapter 14. But I want you to understand that as that strategy of building Christ's church put on flesh, we see that number one, those Christians were added to the church at large. Words like body and bride we could think about. Or, number two, they were also added to the local church. And I need you to understand that every person who becomes a Christian is added to the church. We have to understand that. I know this is fundamental stuff, but we live in a day and age where people want to divorce responding to Jesus from being added to the church. You can't divorce those two thoughts in the New Testament. When someone became a Christian, it was synonymous with they were added to the church. They were either added to a church that already existed, or B, they were added to a new church that was established by a church plant. You follow me now? Okay? We see this play out throughout the New Testament and even on down to our age in two ways. Number one, we see it play out through movement, through a church shift, or through a church plant, or a missional church plant. And what I mean by that is, and it'd be better just to bring up this point because this is where you really see it in the New Testament. When I talk about movement, I'm talking about churches sometimes get planted or started when God's people move or shift, culturally speaking. Okay? Think about what happened there in Acts chapter 8. If you think of the context of Acts chapter 8, there's a persecution that arises in the church there in Jerusalem. And we are told in that case that the church spread out from Jerusalem into Judea and then to the regions of Samaria, which is consistent with what Jesus said his church was going to do when he repeated that strategy in Acts chapter 1 and verse 8. You will be my witnesses in Jerusalem, in Judea, in Samaria, and even to the uttermost parts of the earth. And so sometimes churches get established when God's people move, quite literally. Or in Romans chapter 16, you ever read Romans chapter 16? What do you read in Romans chapter 16? You read about a series of house churches in the city of Rome. How did those churches get there? Well, I've got a couple of suggestions. The people that were converted on the day of Pentecost, some of them, we are told, came from Rome. What did they do when they went back there? They planted churches. They took God's message from Jerusalem, and when they relocated back to their home city of Rome, they planted a church in their particular community. You see, they didn't all live on the same block in Rome. Rome was a very large and sprawling city, and when they came back, they established churches in the different places in which they lived. Or secondly, it could have been those others. It was a very fluid community, people coming in and out of Rome. So as Paul preached the gospel in Corinth or Philippi or anywhere else, as those people would have moved to Rome, maybe looking for jobs or something like that, what did they do? They didn't just stop attending church, being a part of the church. They established those churches. I would venture to say that many of the congregations that exist in the United States of America today were established in this very way. As the United States expanded from the East Coast to the West Coast, and as folks moved west looking for opportunity and jobs, what did they do? They planted churches. Again, we go back to the idea that every church was started by somebody for some particular reason. And as the church expanded from the East to the West, and as people moved for jobs, they planted churches in the communities in which they lived. But we also see missional church planting, that is, churches that are planted out of intentional acts of missionary work in the book of Acts. Acts chapter 2 is the perfect example. Peter stands up on the day of Pentecost. He preaches that first gospel sermon. 3,000 or more respond that day. What happens? The church is planted in Jerusalem on that day through new converts. We see that three times in Paul's three missionary journeys recorded in the book of Acts, where Paul and Barnabas leave out from Antioch, and as they go out from Antioch, they go on these missionary journeys, and what is it they do in each of those communities that they stop in? You know what they do. They plant churches. And so we see this idea that churches don't just happen. They don't just pop up out of holes in the ground. They happen because it is part of, number one, God's strategic way of spreading the gospel into the whole world. And number two, they happen when God works through His people to move them to establish the church in the places in which they live. There are some modern examples of how churches get started that we actually don't see examples in the New Testament. And we're going to talk more about this on the next page, but hives, when a church decides that instead of building a bigger building, it would be better to take 50 people and go start a church on the other side of town. Or splits, where one group within the church decides that they can no longer fellowship everyone else within the church, and so they actually leave out from the church in which they are a part of, and they split that church. And unfortunately, we have many churches that exist today because of that very thing. All right, let's wrap our mind around this for just a second, though. Every church that exists, every church that exist, had one of these four beginnings. This is really simplifying it for us to understand. Number one, a church shift. Existing members relocate and begin a new church in the process. Real quick example. I work with the Cawson Street Church of Christ in Hopewell, Virginia. In 1939, Christians who were farmers in the rural eastern part of North Carolina relocated to Hopewell, Virginia, where there was no church in existence. What did they do? Well, you know what they did. They started meeting in a home. And when they started meeting in a home, they started worshiping. They started being the church in that city in which they moved. And they started preaching the gospel. And one day they put up a tent and they preached the gospel, and the 20 members from a denominational church came over and they listened and they responded. And so they went from two or three families to now 30 or 40 people. And that's how the church got started in Hopewell, Virginia, through a church shift. Now it has grown over the years, obviously, and they have gone out to plant other churches. But I would say to you that many churches are started when a church shift happens, culturally speaking. Or a church plant. New converts form a new church. You see this in situations like in Philippi, where Paul went and he preached the gospel to the people there, and those that believed were baptized, and he established a new congregation through doing that. I just went to lunch with a missionary friend of mine who's at the conference this weekend. And the country in which he is a missionary at, when he first arrived there, there was only a handful of churches. Now there are some 15 churches. How did that happen? Because people preached the gospel and started new congregations as the church was planted in those locations. Or a church split. A church divides itself. And I attach to this, as you see on the screen right there, a negative connotation to it. That is to say, when a group of people within the church, and again, I'm not laying blame on any particular group here. Sometimes there arises a situation in which you can no longer have fellowship with those people and you must do something. Okay? But when that happens, when one group of people leave to go start another church, a church split happens. And yes, a church is planted, but the genesis of that church plant was a split. And lastly, a church hive. Now, this is a split in essence, but I call it a hive, thinking of bees as they launch off to form a new hive and expand the colony, because it has a positive connotation. When a church has grown in a particular location, and as the society around them continues to grow, and as population centers begin to grow, that church says, well, I think what we need to do is we need to, instead of building a bigger building, instead of adding multiple services, it would be more efficient for us to take 30 or 40 members and send them out to the other side of the growing part of town. Now, that does happen. It just doesn't happen frequently. Okay? At this point in the presentation, though, I want to take a little excursus from everything that we've been studying and emphasize the crisis. Up to this point, I've tried to convict you of the strategy, that it is not just this modern form of cutting-edge ministry that we're talking about this afternoon. Rather, this is part of God's strategy for advancing the church, and it's just part of the natural way of the gospel going into the whole world, this idea of church planting. It's synonymous with what it means to tell people about Jesus. When God's people move and when the gospel gets preached, churches should get planted. That's what's healthy and that's what is natural. Which makes you wonder, if that's what's healthy and that's what's natural, why don't we talk about it more than we do? Why isn't it something we talk to our guys in our preaching schools about more than we do, or in our colleges more than we do? And more specifically, we better start, because there is a problem. At the present, the best analysis is that each month, 6 Church of Christ congregations close their doors. Let me pause, stop right there. Bob, you quoted in your class about the idea of how few of those congregations have elders. Many, it was something like 65%, I think, is the statistic that you threw out there. Many of those congregations are the ones that are being talked about right here. They have no elders because they are weak and dying. Another congregation that he gave an example of, a church building of what used to be 300 people, or an auditorium that could house 300 people, 16 or something, with 12 core members. That is most churches of Christ. Did you hear that? That is most churches of Christ in the United States. Given the current trends, we expect that rate to double or even triple before we arrive at 2050. If this does occur, we could see the fellowship of churches of Christ drop from just over 12,000 churches to under 3,000 churches by 2050. Now, number one, I know Stan Granberg. Stan's mother and his father was an elder at the church in Tacoma, Washington. And I, to this day, believe that Miss Marlene's going to have a blueberry pie for me when I get to heaven. She would always make a blueberry pie for me every year when I'd go back to teach Bible camp. Stan and I don't agree on and see eye to eye on a lot of things, but when it comes to church planting, I'm right there with Stan in terms of understanding the need to plant more churches. And I think that these statistics, even if they are alarmist, even if they are a little bit of an overreaction to the trend, you got to acknowledge the trend. Go to 21st Century Christian, pick up the Churches of Christ in the United States, look at the statistics yourself. Over the past decade, the number of congregations in that book has steadily declined every single year they put it out. That's with them adding congregations into that book that a decade or two decades ago we would have never included into our fellowship of churches of Christ. I want you to think about that. Statistically, even including groups that in the past 50 years we wouldn't have looked at as part of our fellowship, the number of congregations is steadily declining in the United States. And what you have is, going along with the statistics in Bob's lesson on leadership, is most of the congregations that are represented by churches of Christ are older, meaning the population that are part of that congregation is 50 plus. They're at the end of their life cycle, meaning that they had their beginning, they've grown, and they're at the point where they're ready to die. And number three, going back to what I started with, that's most of them. Not a few. That's most. And again, I don't want to be alarmist in any of these things, but what I want you to emphasize is there is a need for churches of Christ to give intentional care to planting churches in subsequent generations. And the question that I want to ask is, who's going to do that? Who's going to do that? Let's go back to the strategy. Let's revisit the church plant strategy that we saw there, starting in Matthew chapter 16, verse 18 and following, and moving on to this present time. And if that truly is the strategy that we need to be revisiting, and if this crisis truly is a crisis, and I believe that it is, that we need to be paying attention to and we need to giving some awareness to, what are some bold things that we can do reacting to that strategy to start turning the tide? It's easy for me to stand up and say, well, brethren, we just need to plant some churches. But what does that look like? Who's going to do that? And what does that actually look like given the context and the circumstance that we have in the United States? Well, let me give you 10 suggestions and then we'll take a few comments. This one's a little bold. 1-2 ratio. One pulpit minister for every two church planters. Here's a thought. If you're losing that many churches, and all we're telling our guys when they go to preaching schools and they're going off to Christian colleges is, you're going to go into this Bible program and when you come out you're going to be a preacher, where are they going to preach at? If 65% of those congregations that are out there can't afford a full-time guy, then who are they going to quote-unquote work for? What congregation are they going to work with in the next 20, 30, or 40 years? We need to start telling our guys, you need to, instead of, to open their eyes to some different avenues for ministry, to plant a church instead of looking for an active congregation to preach for. Or how about this one? Hive instead of build. Hive instead of build. You know, as the church declines, population is continuing to grow. Let me ask you a question. What makes more sense to you? A $3 to $4 million building project? And taking God's people $5 million, I've seen sometimes, into debt? Or taking 50 people over to the other side of town that's grown 10,000 people since that church started and starting a new church? Which one makes more sense? But which one gets the most attention? See, when we think about church planting as a strategy, it opens our mind to different ways of approaching ministry. Or how about this one, the rebirth of dying churches with new ones? You know, of those 65% of congregations that don't have elders, and many of them are dying, you know what they have? You know what they have? They have bank accounts and buildings. They have bank accounts and buildings. Some of them have hundreds of thousands of dollars of assets tied up into a congregation of 10 to 12 members. I know that this is a tough thing to talk about. It's a tough reality to accept. But what if those 10 to 12 members offered that bank account and offered that building to a new group of people, a group of church planters to come in and rebrand the congregation in that community. What are the options? What are the alternatives? Well, you could keep holding on to that tradition. You could keep riding that thing right into liquidation if you want. And then what happens? God's presence, which once existed in a community, evaporates. Or how about support church planters? If you go through our congregations that are not in that 65%, you go through congregations that are 100 members plus even, we'll just make that the arbitrary cutoff line, how many of those congregations are actively supporting a church planter? I know we keep sending people over to India, and I know we keep sending people over to Africa, but how long is it going to be before they start sending people over to us? We're getting kind of to that point, aren't we? It's not just far-off suggestions anymore when you start looking at these things. How many of our congregations are actually supporting church planters, like the congregation in West Texas was willing to support me so many years ago, with a vision that says, there's a need in our country to plant more churches, and we're willing to support you to go do it. Number five, what about collaborating regionally to plant churches? I fully believe in the autonomy of the local congregation, but sometimes it's our Achilles heel. We really struggle sometimes to work together, to collaborate together as autonomous congregations to accomplish sort of big picture things. I've never been anywhere in the country where churches were not grouped together regionally. In my area, you've got the Richmond, Virginia area congregations, and we have our area preachers meeting, and we've got our fifth Sunday singing, and we've got events. And when the flyers go out for the events that each congregation has, they go out into that particular region. And then to our south and east, you've got the Virginia Beach Tidewater area churches, and they're grouped together. What if just those churches within those regions that are many of them growing in terms of the population, work together to plant new churches in the expanding areas of that population center? What if it became the discussion instead of, like Bob was saying, instead of the preachers' meetings full of, well, the church is declining and people aren't listening to truth anymore, what if it was, hey, how can we work together and collaborate to start a new church over in this area or over in that area? Or blow our mind, what if you sent some members from your church and I sent some members from my church to establish a congregation in that place where God's people don't have a presence? Wouldn't that be something? Wouldn't that be something?
I've seen the efforts of larger congregations support smaller ones and attempting to reestablish the growth in those congregations. Home missions, out of a faith village, is very active in this.
Yeah, there are some churches, and I need to say that there are some churches out there that are doing that. Many of the things that I pointed out, there are some churches doing that. My point is it's the exception, not the norm.
Right. Exactly, yeah.
It's not the efforts of a few are not replacing the scale in which the problem is happening.
I don't deny that.
Sure. But that's good to know that there are churches that are doing that. Let's skip over to these, get through these last ones in the last few minutes that we have. Number six, how about launching strategic missional small groups out from your church? Call these exploratory missions, right? You know, how about you go down to a coffee shop somewhere on the other side of town and you just strike up a conversation? You know, you might just plant a church in doing so. What if instead of, and we were talking about, and you know, the elephant in the room on Sunday nights, what if instead of a Sunday night service, you had a group of 10 to 15 of your members go to a place, a McDonald's on the other side of town, and have a Bible study or a worship service? Would it be such a bad thing if that resulted in a church plant? If that resulted in a new community of God's people serving and preaching the gospel to any given community? Number seven, and I've already mentioned hit on this a little bit, but what about a greater emphasis on church planting in our colleges and our schools, where guys are actually equipped and in their mind this vision is put? If you want to go work for a congregation, you want to preach in a congregation, go for it. But also don't forget that you don't have to go across the ocean in order to be a missionary. There's plenty of places in our communities where new churches need to be formed, because like people, churches have life cycles. They just do. They're born, they live, and they die. And any society that doesn't have a plan to duplicate itself or doesn't give attention to that is not going to be a society that is going to be around for very long. Any fellowship of churches that doesn't give attention to the idea of planting new churches is going to struggle in the long run. And we're seeing the effects of that in Churches of Christ in the United States. Number 8, how about creating a vision of multiplication on the local scale and the large scale? I mean, here we are at the True Ministry Conference, and I'm doing my best to challenge us to think about church planting. I view this as part of my efforts of creating a vision of multiplication, of encouraging all of us to take the message of church planting back to our churches, back to our regions, back to our preachers' meetings, and talk to them about these things. Stuff happens after you talk about it and you plan it. It doesn't just pop up out of a hole in the ground. And talking to our members about the need of multiplication, getting back to talking about evangelism, making an evangelism not just something that you can do if you want to, but it's something that we are called to do as a church. When we put our people on a multiplication mindset and we give them the vision of multiplication, it will result in new communities and new ministries amongst God's people. Number 9, embracing alternative ministry models. And I just threw up on there bivocational ministry and etc. I can count on both of my hands right now guys that I know have left the ministry for financial reasons, because they could no longer support their families. What if we taught guys in our schools? What if we mentored guys how to work and plant a church at the same time? You got Wesley Walker apparently working a job, a second job hasn't hurt his tools too much, because he can preach as good as anybody. But what if we embrace these alternative ministry models that are out there in order to do things like plant churches, where a man may move into a community and work a job within that community while he plants a church out of his home, where he works within these missional small groups and meets in a coffee shop for 6 to 8 months, establishing a new congregation. And number 10, what about equipping our young people to be planters as they launch? Equipping our young people to be planters as they launch. One of the things that I'm constantly amazed about with the younger generation, as I look at my own, I've got a 15-year-old son, and from his age on up to the college ages, they're looking for something different. They're looking for something bold. They want to be involved, but it's the traditional way that they are having a problem with. Well, nothing says non-traditional like starting a Bible study group with your college buddies in a coffee shop, or nothing says non-traditional like launching a church out of your dorm room on a college campus. What if we put it in the minds of our young people that they're not the church of the future, to be the church where they're at, wherever they are at, because that's God's strategy for the church. All right. I've only got a couple of minutes left, 3 minutes, but I want to take the opportunity, and one of the things I wanted to do in this lesson, and then just a kind of a preview of what we're going to do tomorrow morning, is we're going to look at a case study example of how does this work? You know, what are some of the best practices? What are some of the best models? Some of the effective ways? I'm going to teach you some of the things that I learned, some of the things that I would have done differently. I asked my wife about this. I asked the people that planted a church with me about this. If we had to go back to day one, all over again, when we planted a church, how would we do it differently and what things would we keep the same? And actually look at a case study example tomorrow morning on how to actually go about planting a church. Because I think, honestly, that was the hardest thing for me to learn was, what do I do? How do you go about this? If you've never done it before and nobody is mentoring you to do it, how do you go about doing that? Okay. But before I close out this afternoon, and I appreciate you guys coming to this session this afternoon, I want to open it up for any comments that you might have. And I know this is being recorded, and I'll try to repeat those comments or questions that anybody has. But maybe you came in here with a question. Maybe you came in here and you're asking a question about church planting, or you have a certain desire to do something. I'd be glad to address any of that this evening. Anybody? Yes, sir.
You said that six churches a day on average are closing doors. Six a month,
there you go. Let's go right there. Yeah, six churches a month. Yeah.
Now, is that because, in general, is that because we're losing members, or is that because of something, say, like urbanization? Like, if nobody wants to live in, say, Amber, Oklahoma, because nobody lives in Amber, Oklahoma.
Right.
Is that, and if, I don't even know if there was a church in Amber, Oklahoma.
Right.
How more common is it that people, say Amber, Oklahoma, just stop going to church?
Right.
Or because there's nobody that lives there anymore?
Okay, so a fair question. And I'm going to let Bob chime in on this for a little bit too, but let me add this real quick, Bob. So think about what has happened in the United States of America in the last 150 years. 150 years ago, where did most of the population live? On farms. And then what did they do? They moved into the cities. And that shift into the cities also coincided with a shift in the church. Okay? So that shift has left some congregations high and dry. Okay, that's one aspect of it. Another aspect of it is economy. Like the town you mentioned, Amber, Oklahoma. I don't know Amber, Oklahoma, but I know a town up in Colorado that had a mine in the town and a very large, thriving church. And when the mine shut down, the church shut down. Basically went down to nothing. A third reason is the life cycle principle. Churches have life cycles. And since most of our congregations were all established within a few decades of one another, and they're reaching their life cycle in within a few decades of one another, it's all coming to a head at the same time. Bob, you got something to add to that?
Well, I was just going to kind of mention the example that I talked about earlier that you referenced with the congregation. They have a building that seats 300, and they have 16
right.
on a good Sunday and 12 as a core group. When I met with the elders there, and I asked them, what they preferred to do. I asked them, how emotionally attached are you to this building?
Right.
And one elder said, well, it's just a building. We can do anything. And the other one said, I was baptized here in 1971. I've never been anywhere else. The youngest member in that congregation is 63.
Yeah.
And I asked them, I said, if you don't make this decision, don't you think someone's going to make it for you?
Right.
Very near future. And it's they're going to be another statistic. There'll be another one of those six
right.
at some point in the future because they
yeah.
have no resources. It's not the area that they're living in that's declining. In fact, it's a very wealthy community
right.
as far as it's an oil area, and there are a lot of people that live there. It's just that they, and I think if you tied into that, but the life cycle of the church, I mean,
right.
they've gone through this where they've just declined, and they never put in place an approach to change the direction of the future, and it's just declined, and now they're going to be in a position where they have no choice.
Absolutely.
I can speak to urbanization. You know, Nashville goes by about 100 people a day move to our city,
mm-hmm.
but yet there are churches that are shutting their doors in the urban areas as well. And the church is in decline there in terms of overall numbers, despite the fact that we're increasing significantly as a city. So,
right.
I mean, I think some of these rural areas have to do with it, but there was
sure.
tribal congregations of 700, 800 members 30 years ago that are selling their buildings and expanding because they just know they haven't been able to reach their community once they went through that cycle.
Yeah, so David, the answer to your question is it's complicated in one sense. I mean, it's a multifaceted thing that's all coming together to create this problem.
Well,
so,
let me ask you this kind of
go ahead.
Follow-up.
Go for it.
If there was, and when I say Amber, Oklahoma, it's like it is nothing, like nobody lives there.
Right.
Should I really be concerned about planting a church there or saving a church that's already there or let that one die off so that whatever resources they had could go to that community wherever around there where people are actually living?
Well, I mean, again, and we could talk a little bit more about this afterwards because I've got I got several things I'd like to say to that. But not knowing that particular situation, I take the old McDonald approach to church planning. Here a church, there a church, everywhere a church, church. That's the way that we need to be thinking. If there's a community of people and there's no church that's actively engaging that community, then I feel like there needs to be one. Because again, God's people in a community is representative of God's presence in the community. And if people aren't engaging that community with the gospel, then, you know, is the church accomplishing what it needs to be doing in that community? There's a community straight across the river from New York City. 575,000 people live in that particular community. No Church of Christ exists in that community. Why? I mean, can't somebody come out of some school and go into that community and plant at least one church to engage those people? So, I mean, I think you would have to look at that and make some tough choices. I mean, what are you going to do with that church if they say, no, we won't change? Then the answer to that question is sometimes things just have to die.
Because I would think that a community of 500,000
or right.
50.
Right.
When you could just drive down the highway. I don't know. I mean, I want to say
sure.
A downer, but I'm just trying to
no.
Around the whole
yeah. Thing. Yeah. Yeah. Do you have something, James?
And then we don't engage that neighborhood. We just rely on all the people who have been at the church forever. And then they move away, but then they still commute to the church building, right? But in the meantime, we don't engage the neighborhood that's changed around us. And
yeah.
then there's another death.
Yep.
Because everybody commutes in, and then that, I mean, yeah, never mind. But
no, man, you're preaching. You're preaching.
But that is another problem. That we don't engage the neighborhood around us.
Sure.
We just rely on people commuting into us.
Absolutely.
And the congregation right. relies on the minister to do all the work. Yeah. As members,
I know that.
We need to get out there too.
Sure. Yeah. I'm going to take one more comment, then we're going to have to wrap it up so we can get to the other session. Yes, sir.
We shouldn't expect anything greater than congregations dying if they're not about doing the service God intends us to do.
Absolutely. All right, listen, I don't want this to be a Debbie Downer kind of lesson, okay? I do want to accentuate the fact that there are challenges facing Churches of Christ over the next few years. The reason that I'm talking about this is because there's some things we could do about it. And it goes back to God's strategy for the gospel all along, that we as God's people need to be engaging the world with the gospel. And when converts happen and when God's people shift, we need to be thinking in terms of planting churches. That is what is natural to the Great Commission. Okay? It's what is healthy and functional. All right, we're going to take a break here for, I guess, about the next 10, 15 minutes, and then there's a panel discussion over in Classroom A. The next part of this class is going to be tomorrow morning at 9:45. Thank you, guys.